Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller, and I'm recording on Friday, and it is now 8:30 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time here in London. And this being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the various asset classes. Now, let's start with Wall Street. And I'm prompted because I've got a quite a bearish article that's been produced by Ambrose Evans Pritchard, who I hold in high regard, as subscribers will certainly know. He's a superb journalist, and he has brilliant contacts. Well, he has lots of good contacts. And he is, perhaps most importantly at all, he can be prescient, which is very, very useful. So what do I make of all this? And it's in a somewhat academic argument here overall, and my conclusion is I don't believe it. At least I don't believe it just yet. And why? Because I don't see the evidence in the charts. Now, I'm talking about stock market charts, but I'll talk about other charts as well, quite obviously. Now, what we do know is that we have had a bull market since the beginning of 2009, or certainly end of the first quarter in 2009. So we are somewhere between 8 years to mostly through the first quarter of the ninth year of this bull market. Now, it hasn't been bullish for all stock market indices, that's for sure. Although most of them are doing pretty well right now, as you will be well aware. And Wall Street has continued to perform really quite well, down a tiny bit here today, although the NASDAQ was up slightly. But it's up near its highs, up near its all-time highs. So is the UK stock market index, despite all the alarming forecasts that we had received early on from experts from far and wide. What does all that bearish comment mean? And I say with no hint or meaning or intention of arrogance, that when we have a market that's rising and there are some high-profile bears around, let alone lots of high-profile bears around, that's a welcome contrary indicator more often than not, because what it tells us is that if there are a lot of bears around, that obviously not everyone is long. And as a matter of fact, they may well be trying to talk the market down. And that's been one of the big stories that we've seen over this 8 years plus bull market to date. And it's still working. Now, will those bears eventually be right? Well, of course they will. Even a stop clock is right twice a day. When? Timing is crucially important in markets. And I think that, and if we look at all the, I won't try to break down all the various different arguments, but a lot of people are saying, well, Wall Street's overvalued. Well, fair enough, but interest rates still remain low and have only just started to go up. And, you know, inflation pressures, while they're rising, they're still low at this stage. And government bond yields, are still ranging here. The U.S. dollar is not running wild on the upside. As a matter of fact, it's only slightly above the dollar index. It's only slightly above that 100 level, 100.350. As bond yields are around the 250 level on the 10-year bond. So it's a stable environment here overall. There's lots of uncertainty. There are lots of concerns. And probably the biggest concern that I hold, or I have, and that other people have mentioned repeatedly here overall, is if we take that Wall Street strength, we know what Trump wants to do, or has in fact even promised that he's actually going to do. And I'm talking about big tax cuts, and I'm talking about lots of fiscal spending. I think we're talking about $1 trillion of fiscal spending, which I assume that he's thinking about spreading that over two terms, provided he doesn't get impeached somewhere along the way for just annoying tweets, if nothing else. But the question that a number of people are asking is, when will we see that infrastructure spending? Will we see it at all, or will it be pared back significantly? When will we see those tax cuts? And the same thing, will they be significant, or will they be relatively minor? And what other sort of perhaps misguided economic policies will actually take place that might create trade wars and other problems? Well, I'm hoping that Trump's smart enough, and if he isn't, that his advisors are smart enough to pull him back from some of the destructive moves that have been mentioned. And I hope that we get, those infrastructure programs underway, and get the tax cuts underway before the end of next year. But that's very much in doubt at this stage. So in a way, there's a little bit of a confidence game here. People are giving Trump the benefit of the doubt, and that leaves scope for disappointment. When might that scope for disappointment actually occur? Well, veteran subscribers will know, I've said for years that the best performing quarters of the year on average are the first quarter and the fourth quarter of the year. And the second quarter and the third quarter is when you get underperformance on average over decades. There are certainly exceptions in terms of these quarterly performances, but we are entering a period when it would not be surprising to see some shakeouts. And my feeling is that if investors are really quite disappointed in Trump just because things aren't happening soon enough and it's causing a credibility gap, then we could see some sharp downward dynamics. We could even see what I would describe as a cyclical bear market. That could be a decline of 20%. If it's a decline of 20% in some of the Wall Street indices, it would be bigger in other indices around the world. But that's kind of the worst outlook that I can envisage at this stage, certainly on the basis of what we know today. Now, some sort of big war breaks out in the Asia-Pacific region, whether it's China in the China Sea, or whether it's something that insanely stupid that North Korea does. those are things I'm not going to be, that I'm aware of and keep an eye on, but I'm not going to base my portfolio on those possibilities actually occurring, certainly not at this stage at any rate. So for the most part, things look still okay. Therefore, my outside downside risk, as I say, is over the next two quarters would be a cyclical bear market. Those tend to be relatively short, give me anything from a month to 3 months or so, but they're not far from an end of the world situation. And as a matter of fact, they create an additional buying opportunity for anybody who is interested in buying. And I think that I wouldn't want to be leveraged and long up here at this stage right now, because markets But I, again, don't think, people who've jumped out of their portfolios and closed everything down, and they've done it, some of them have done it on a number of occasions, have missed out on a lot of action. So I'm still writing positions. Which markets do I like most? I'm going to still say that Wall Street I've been talking about it on a relatively short to medium term basis in terms of the next 2 quarters. So take a much longer term view here overall. I like markets that have been giving the best performance signals over this bull market phase to date. They remain in favor, usually for good reasons. And with Wall Street, despite the Trump uncertainties, and some of you may actually say, the Trump economic policies, if you can get them through, are welcomed, and I would agree with that. But again, the U.S. has the advantage of virtual energy independence. In other words, it can be energy independent whenever it wants to, and when prices are quite low, it stops producing as much of its own energy and buys in more of the cheaper energy. The U.S. is the swing producer in terms of energy, and that's going to be the case for decades, well beyond the end of my hopefully long life. And also technology. The U.S. has still got that technology lead, and people have been forecasting for decades that that was ending, and China was going to take over the technology lead, or Japan or Germany or whatever. Well, the U.S. has actually strengthened its lead over the last 8 or 9 years or more, if anything. So that's good, and I also like the big multinationals, the autonomies that we talk about. They're impressive and benefiting from all over the world. What I don't want to see is the dollar run up too quickly. That would be bad for markets generally. I don't want to see bond yields run up too quickly. If they edge higher, that's fine for a while. I'll start to get more concerned when they get closer or to 4% and above. But at this stage, still okay. In terms of sectors, there's one runaway overall winner, that's technology. The one big risk with technology is while companies can do phenomenally when they get the upper hand with new products, obsolescence is never that far away. That's why it's good to monitor them on price charts overall, and not to chase, but to pick up on the setbacks. But technology, far and away the best sector, and that will be the case well into the very, very distant future. I've talked for years about an accelerating rate of technological innovation. I think that if one doesn't see that today, one isn't looking. I'll put it that way. And there's no natural end to that accelerating rate of technological innovation. It's actually picking up speed, and it'll take a doomsday rock to end that trend. And I'm in with a chance, but I'm not forecasting the doomsday rock. Okay, what other sectors as well? Well, I think there we want to look at the charts quite closely. Things move in out of fashion quite frequently. We've had a wonderful run in the bank shares. I don't think it's quite over here overall. And that's a very, very good sign also that this bull market is not rolling over and dying. One of the indicators that would make me quite concerned would be if we did see a significant deterioration once again in those bank shares. I know they underperformed for a very, very long time. We know the reasons for that, but they have now been staging catch-up moves here overall. They've been showing good bullish relative strength, and while that continues, or at least they don't clearly underperform, that's a favorable another favorable environment here. So while I said that I think the maximum downside risk in the next two quarters would be a cyclical bear market, I'm not forecasting a cyclical bear market. We might get through the next quarters in better shape, but I would be very, very surprised to see a significant bear market, which a lot of people have been forecasting and a lot of people are still forecasting. So that's my view, and I'll be guided by the charts, and I don't think that's a bad way to monitor a portfolio. You'd expect me to say that, wouldn't you? Now, other markets. Wall Street, I mentioned. If we go to the Asia-Pacific region, the runaway winner there has, for the most part, pretty much been India. And Narendra Modi, it looks like he's in with a good chance for a second term. That's still a couple of years off. I suppose a lot can change over that period, but I've said for a long time, since before he was actually elected, that Narendra Modi was an extraordinarily capable individual. Governance is everything, in our views here at Fuller Money. And you've got incredibly good governance in India, and my God, does India still need incredibly good governance? It does indeed, but they've got just the right man running that economy, and long may it last, allowing those inventive people and that young population to improve their lives. We certainly know they're capable of doing that. You look at Indian people running all sorts of economies, from senior executive advisory roles all over the world. What about China? Well, big question marks there. Technically, it doesn't look all that bad, except it's underperformed here for a long time. I have trouble with communist regimes, and I overlook that from time to time on a short to medium term basis, but it does remain a problem. Although the communist regime has achieved some quite remarkable things. There are debt problems all over the globe those certainly worry the bears, and they should concern us all. And the global economy needs a sustained period of steady, not overheating GDP growth. If we get a sustained period of that, then we will avoid the worst ructions to the downside. And more importantly, also, if we get a sustained period of GDP growth expansion, which isn't overheating and becoming a bubble, that we will see those debt levels come down really quite significantly, and that would be a very welcome environment. And I actually expect to see that over the next 10 to 20 years. So I'm not at all bearish about the long-term outlook overall. What about the whole robotics thing? Well, that's a challenge in terms of jobs and just about any job is, so many jobs are capable, I'll put it that way, of being replaced by computers. New jobs are invented all along, all along the way, but technology is accelerating, job creation is not accelerating, I'll put it that way. So that will remain a problem here overall. But right now, we see with the economy just picking up, a global economy just picking up, we see that's having a very beneficial effect on employment figures. And again, that can continue if we get these moderate growth levels, which I think is a reasonable forecast. Now, at some point that ends, and what would be warning signs that it was ending? And I would say, well, you'd expect to see bond yields spiking. That would be one warning signal. The dollar taking off. That would be another warning signal. And economic data, inflationary figures picking up. All these sorts of things. They're out there somewhere. In the future, but they're not problems here right now. They're unlikely to be major problems during the rest of this year, in my opinion. So other markets that maybe stand out a little bit overall. India would be my runaway preference in Asia. It's a little bit high here right now. But one could have said that at almost any time over the last many, many, many years. And Japan, I think, is also is interesting as well. But generally, if optimism picks up, then I would expect some of those so-called little tigers to do quite well. A lot of those economies and stock markets, they've been treading water for a very, very long time. So they have decent long-term upside potential, in my opinion. Looking elsewhere around the world, Europe's been such a disaster area for so long, and it remains that overall. But the facts right now is that Mario Draghi has managed things about as skillfully as anyone could in that position. The euro without a federal structure is a disaster, as we all know, and we're going to see more breakups there. But you know, you look at those European stock markets here right now, they're benefiting from the liquidity. And that's not over just yet. I wouldn't want to be overweight in Europe, as some people have recommended, because there's too much uncertainty. And there's also a lot of anger, which I don't think is very good. It's not a happy environment overall, for obvious reasons. That low growth and that high unemployment that's been persistent for such a long period of time. And what about other parts of the world? New Zealand, good value market, still performing. Australia really ought to benefit more from its resources sector if we get that somewhat stronger GDP growth that the people have been forecasting. So those are, and also we've seen the South American commodity producers. We've seen a lot of them come back from the dead and show some quite good gains, and those recoveries aren't certainly aren't over here just yet. in that whole European region, incidentally, though I think, again, my favorite would be the UK. I think it's an incredibly competitive position here overall. I just hope we get the Brexit situation right in terms of a fair deal for the UK and also the rest of Europe. I mean, a deal that's not predatory. It's something that works, makes common sense, but we will see. We will see about that. Now, what about long-dated government bonds? Well, it's a story of bear markets. Very slow-motion bear markets, but when you get a 35, 36-year bull market in terms of falling yields, I won't live that to see that again. But when that ends, virtually by definition, you move into a bear market phase. Are we going to see U.S. yields, 10-year yields, going back out to 17%? Well, no. I don't think we'll see anything like that at all. But will they go up to 4, 5, 6, perhaps 7% within the next decade? I think there's a very good chance that that will happen. And if we start seeing 5, 6, 7%, that's going to produce some bear markets in equities. But the bond markets, definitely we see bear markets gradually developing here. And I would not want to be long those markets against that overall background. Now, if you have to be there, then I think the short-dated positions are superior, but hopefully you don't have to be there if you don't wish to be. Looking at commodities, we know that there are late runners in bull cycles, and they have been performing since the beginning of last year, and they are still wobbling here overall. I think crude oil is the one that faces the most headwinds here for the well-known reasons that you get people describing crude oil as a massive polluter, and it is certainly a polluter, and a pariah fuel. I've been hearing that for long enough, and then prices were outrageously expensive a few years ago, and OPEC had control. All that's changed, and all those renewables are becoming increasingly competitive. I've got an article going up today which astonished me, that Germany, no less, has produced they're turning old coal mines, or at least one major old coal mine, into a huge battery. I don't want to tell you all about it, you'll be able to read about it. But another victory for technology, human creativity, and recycling. It's all there, and a very nice story. And Germany is not the only country that could do that, although it certainly gets the credit for being the first one, at least to my knowledge, to actually do that. So, where does that leave us? I was talking about the oil prices here, overall energy prices. I think that they're more likely to go down than up over time. And that doesn't mean that companies won't make good money. I think it'll be one of those virtuous declines in prices. Certainly talking about the renewables where prices go down, but the operation becomes that much more efficient and more widely used, companies are in the industry are selling more of what they actually have and making decent profits at lower prices. But the really big beneficiaries of lower energy costs are economies. And I think that's one factor you should consider always when looking at countries. Who pays too much for their energy? Well, most of the world does. The U.S. is in a more competitive position. You could say that, you know, some of the Middle Eastern countries like Saudi Arabia, they're more competitive than anyone else on energy, but they haven't got that much in the way of industries. So the U.S. situation, I think, is uniquely attractive with having the industries and the technologies and having the energy. And how long will this cyclical bull trend last in commodity markets? Well, it's almost a year and a quarter old. If we get that 3-4% growth level, that's presumably down the road some way, but if we get 2% plus and then start to move closer to 3% plus as we get into the end of this decade, we'll see those commodity prices move somewhat higher. And so I think there's still some attractive plays there and some very, very good yields as well, which ought to be sustainable at this stage. And in terms of currencies overall, I've only mentioned my concern that we don't want to see too strong a dollar overall. People are very bearish of sterling. Sterling is extremely competitive at its current level. I'd be more concerned, you know, sterling right now against the US dollar is at 1.2396, so it's a bit firmer. I would be more worried if sterling moved up too sharply over the next year or so than if it moved temporarily below that 120 level, which it easily could here overall, but that would just improve what is already a very attractive competitiveness in sterling. Now, I think what most people would like to see, if we're getting somewhat better growth, to see a little bit more stability in currencies generally, and I think that's a prospect here going forward. Something on the whole Brexit story, I voted for Brexit, and I think it's this country should be independent, and you're certainly not independent if you get the European Central Bank and European Commissions. You get Brussels making your laws, which I never approved of. But what we need, and what the Chancellor messed up, and I think Theresa May, the Prime Minister, she has good strengths, but I think there was a vision problem there. And we need, in my opinion, a Brexit Chancellor of the Exchequer, someone who actually voted for Brexit. And that's extremely important, because this country needs to be as competitive as possible. That means lower taxes, not higher taxes, and a budget deficit goes up for a few years. That's a risk that needs to be taken under the extraordinary circumstances of Brexit. So we need a Chancellor who will be stimulative and who will help to make the economy as competitive as it can be. And on that note, I would apologize for a little bit of kerfuffle here with the website. I work on my own, which I really, really appreciate most of the time. Well, of course, I communicate with Owen daily when he's in his office in Los Angeles, and I'm here in London, and we both work from our own homes, which is absolutely wonderful. I have peace and quiet, and that's good concentrating, thinking time, which I never had in offices. I can't even hold a cat in my lap if I want to. But when something goes wrong with the computers and I can't sort it out and it happens in the evening, that can be a problem. But the website is working again, and long may that last. And I hope to see I'm seeing a number of you at the markets now, coming up towards the end of this month, and it'll be another interesting one. Come along if you can. And on that note, all the very best to all of you.